a strategy? Oh, thank you.
Byung just asked if we were recording, so
Okay.
Byung, we didn't catch all of it, but this will be useful.
Okay, well, I can go back a bit and just recap since we're recording now. So the first
Thanks.
part is understand different network types, and the network types could be different if you are an enterprise organization or you provide services to other organization and end users. And virtualized container application networks is one of those things which is similar in enterprise and service provider, but it's slightly different from other types of networks where you have VLANs and vSANs, overlay networks, private addresses to manage, and mapping of private addresses to the public addresses. Access is where a lot of these servers or UEs come together, and it could be different. For example, in enterprises, just laptops and servers. And we're in an service provider business, you may have CPEs that are placed on the customer premises. Aggregation, on the other hand, brings together a lot of LTL3. Its main job is providing traffic routing and converging layer two and layer three. You will see a lot more network appliances, whereas in virtualized container environment, there's a lot of the stuff that can be done in virtual, like VMware or some other software that you might be using. And the core is really faster packet forwarding to right destination. It really focuses on L3 type of capabilities, IP and PLS, IPsec. And routers and switches may be high density routers and switches. The last one, where service provider networks mostly categorizes they're providing service to other enterprises and users. In there, you have to manage the optical layer, where a lot of the stuff in aggregation access is running over Ethernet physical layer. Whereas in optical transport, OC, photon and lambda management may be part of your network management. You also have to provide quality of service for different type of traffic, for internet, for CDN, for content delivery. Video and voice may have different QoS values or quality of experience values that you need to maintain. And number of endpoints goes up. And most of the big service provider have 20 to 30 million subscribers. So you have to manage the CPEs or UEs at that large scale. And DHCP for IP assignments, IP management, DNS is integrated in every network connection you provide. And you may have to manage point to point for certain enterprise use cases, point to multipoint, for example, sales point of sale systems or bank ATMs are mostly point to multipoint network connectivity. So when building AI, you have to sort of consider all these permutations of network that go in. How do you see the business of network itself? A couple of views presented here. First one is ITIL-V3. It's mostly about how to provide end user services. So they suggest that you take care of some best practices when you're building the service strategy. It's most of strategic. What is your service portfolio? How do you estimate demand and forecast? And how do you make it that it doesn't go out of business by overcosting? So you have to manage the financials. When considering AI, some of this stuff will pay will need the paying attention to, because needs for data augmentation, help in decision making will be different in presentation. Technically, same data that you collect may support, but the reports may have different views. So looking at strategy management, demand forecasting always have to be paired with your existing run rate or baseline, and of course, financials need to have ROI that is net positive. For service design, you may need to consider the catalog services catalogs. You may have to consider SLAs. You may have to evaluate risk, and then you have to look at capacity, availability, security, compliance. And let me just move this box. Oops. It won't let me do it. Okay. So their next phase is service transition. This is where a service is created and services and the process of transitioning to actual production or operation. So in here, you have to have view of the assets. You have to create configuration. You have to test and validate those configurations. You may have to evaluate different scenarios, and you have to create release processes, release code, and you have to maintain knowledge base for it. Once it's transitioned in actual operation, you may have to do fulfillment. And that is, in the wireless business, how does a UE get provision, get access to it? Or in enterprise data access, high-speed data, you may have to install CPE. So there may be different processes that require different type of information and configuration. You may also have to deal with providing access. This is where, like in cloud, you have accounts and you have privileges assigned. In operations, you also have to deal with events and event correlation. And you have to have rules or evaluation criteria where you can promote events to incidents. And then over time, you need to have correlations and insights so you can take some of these instances and figure out that these are systematic problems, and you have to have a problem management there. And lastly, the continuous improvement means in all of these fronts in operations, you want to make sure that your KPIs are being improved, your service levels are being improved. You have way of measuring what's needed to understand how network performs and provide reporting for other phases, for example, for transition management, design, or strategy management. And then it's the continuous improvement that continues itself. And then another view that is more of a business management view. This has been part of the ITU TMN, telecom network management. It's very similar to previous, for example, but their categorization is slightly different. They see a business management layer. This is where you will do strategic planning, revenue assurance, business process engineering, all that kind of stuff to set up your network business. And then they have service management layer. This is where services are incubated and managed, where you may have to deal with service level agreements, service quality, and service assurance mechanism. And it's not just the management aspect. A lot of tooling goes into building those capabilities. You also have to manage cost, delivery, and the time to market or schedule that meets the service strategy requirements. And the network management layer, where, like in ITIL, that was the operations. Here, you have to look at end-to-end network performance, network assurance, diversity of services and devices, congestion, traffic shaping, and so forth. And the last one also, network element layer, is these are the atomic components that make up the network. These are network resources: router switches, load balancers, firewalls, and their related data. So, and if we look at ETSI, how ETSI defines, you may have these listed as infrastructure elements. You may have element managers in it, orchestrators, and so forth. That comes with the network element layer. And then this is OSI view. OSI FCAPS view describe network operations in FCAPS model, where fault configuration, accounting, performance, and security need to be handled. A lot of the attributes in each, I just kind of picked up few just to sort of have people's mind thinking about what can be done, like alarm handling. That's something that you could use machine learning to do alarm handling, anomaly detection and logging, maybe machine learning, a bit of AI, because here you're going from collecting the data to detect an event, network event, whether you got a bandwidth dip or your QoS went down or something like that, and then correlating it to based on the rules or analysis, could that be a deliberate decision by some software or a human? And that could be insider threat. So you could use AI and ML to correlate data to understand the events. And then if events happen to be undesired, turn it into incident. You could also use diagnostic capabilities. And then once these things are sort of, there's an event or problem, you may tweak the config and test an acceptance of that change related to that event. We could also use machine learning and so forth. And finally, alerting and reporting, that's something we already do, but with the machine learning and AI help, this could be auto escalation kind of work that can be put in. And then a bunch of other capabilities, like in configuration. If you're doing configuration, it wouldn't it be nice that you have an auto discovery that brings all the information for you, so you can take a look what exists, and then do provisioning accordingly. You could have backup and restore automated. You could be using AI and machine learning to manage configuration management and inventory data and database itself. And then there might be some certification required for example, security certification for certain services or a quality of experience, quality of service certification on your configuration. And then you can't run the business until you manage your how much you spend and what you get out of it. So accounting of like usage tracking, bandwidth use, chargebacks, and then converting that into based on the business contracts into billing numbers. You also have to account for your assets in large enterprises or in service providers. Sometimes there are hard standby. Those assets need to be tracked. Sometimes you have a lot of on-the-shelf spares that has to be tracked. You also have to track service level management. If you have SLAs, your customer expect that you will provide what are you delivering. And then you also have to do vendor and supplier management. In that case, you may have router switches, server vendors, software vendors. And in some cases, you may be getting services. For example, a lot of network operator may use networks of other service provider where they don't have their own fiber media. And then performance. So I think FCAPS kind of distills it down to a lot of the area where machine learning and AI can be helped. And we just need to figure out how do we go about putting some ideas together where AI ML task force can take a look and say, hey, we need to have this because we already have a project in LFM that can make use of it. To me, if I look at the TMN and if I look at the ETOM business processes or I look at ITIL, there's always going to be this generic planning, design, deployment, operation, and optimization phases of network that will require information. So we can start putting in some suggestive ideas, what takes place in planning, what kind of help from AI or ML could improve the planning process, like a tool that knows that knows the current state, and you put in desired states and it turns out what you need to do. Or in design, similarly, you could do simulation of changes, put model requirement, and come up with a bill of material or configuration that helps you get the design done quickly and have less human errors in it. In deployment, you could have network changes automated based on the machine learning or AI augmentation. That could be for current network changes or deployments, new deployments. You could instrument self-configuration or auto-scaling or traffic rules generation. In operation, you could do correlations, anomaly detection, traffic shaping and management, route optimization, QoS, QoE. This is something when ONAP and Super Blueprint was working with USC researcher Dr. Klein, that's what he was doing for slice management, where he was looking at the existing performance and then using the optimization engine to provide updated configuration back to ONAP. You can also do policy management or policy enforcement, policy administration using AI and machine learning. And that could be very similarly done for service level management or security compliance audits or security SLA maintenance. You could also do what if simulation during maintenance or failures. So you understand if something happens in the network, what will be the next path? And that could be predetermined using AML. And there's a lot of work for customer care and support where we have 2 to 3 tier support structure. These resources are limited and improving on customer care and network support could save a lot of OPEX dollar where, you know, if you get a ticket, customer calls in for some anomaly on their service, how quickly you can get to the network path, you can get a view of configuration involved there and ability to run synthetic payload on those circuits or network hops to determine what the problem might be. And in optimization, I think determining mean time before failure is a very tedious job. So machine learning and AI can help in that. Device defect prediction, that happens. Usually there are some indication that goes on for a while where device is misbehaving, and the device may not be just the router in itself or switch in itself. It could be the memory on the switch or on a virtual server. It could be a NIC card. It could be a variety of things. These are all, you know, somewhere between 0.5% to 1% failure. There's certain amount of time that a vendor will tell you that the device will fail after so many writes or so many reads, but you really have to detect in its use case. For example, devices fail a lot when they get used a lot. So machine learning and AI can help in that. It can help in traffic and device pattern recognition regarding the longevity. You can also look at the traffic behavior for modeling and prediction. And then you can come up with new tools or KPIs that will provide more accurate network performance reports. And they can also help with workflow automation, because we've seen we go between planning to optimization. There are a lot of places where human operators make decision, and those workflows can be automated. For example, just looking at the power management. If you don't do anything, you may be using a lot of network capacity that consumes power, and we can go build greener network with AI and machine learning help. So that's kind of what my idea was, to walk people through, consider all of those things, and come up with some ideas that we can throw on the board. And which I haven't done is, which one of these the planning, design, operation, and optimization ideas can be applied to existing project. For example, ODL, which kind of sunset pretty much, could have used some of these. ONAP can use, because ONAP is still part of orchestration, planning, and deployment of certain type of networks, more so toward the application networks versus aggregation or core networks. But that could be, you know, some additional development that it could do that too. Right now, I think it calls out for another network orchestrator. And I think Nephew could be another place where some of these capabilities can be useful. So that's all I had. Look forward to your feedback on if we are doing the right approach to synthesize some narrowscope areas where AIML task force can say, yeah, let's build that one first and see how that goes. Any thoughts?
Yeah, thanks, Mudassar. I think, did you send this to me? So do I have a copy of this? I feel like.
Yeah, I was working late last night, so I sent to, I think I sent you.
Yeah, I got it too. I think you sent
it. I'll upload. Are you okay if I upload this draft to our meeting minutes page for today?
Yeah.
Okay, great. I think these are interesting use cases, by the way. Thanks for putting this together.
Mm-hmm. Nice.
Thank you, Mudassar. Yeah.
Thank you.
Goes along with what my project is trying to do with ONAP and the 5G core and capturing the data in reference to security and key performance indicators. So this will be really helpful, and definitely will try to share, you know, as I'm learning things with my project as we move into AIML, I will definitely share that with you all, so that we can basically get some more, you know, data behind this.
Yeah, so one of the things that, you know, is challenging is, which pretty much the survey itself, when LFN did the research survey, a lot of the respondents had the same concern. The governing board had the same concern. And we still feel that it's going to be a big issue.
Mm-hmm.
Building the AI model require, you got to train those models on some data.
Right.
And that data is a protected asset by any enterprise. They don't want to easily share. So the first part is going to be, let's have a view of, for example, AT&T network or JP Morgan network or Bank of America network, right? These are large networks. They'll have a lot of data, but they're not willing to share.
Right.
So the first part, how do we synthesize data that takes the protected information out and still be available for researchers? Otherwise, the models that we're going to come up with is not going to be representative. And that's why I wanted to make sure that people understand the networks for, you know, you can build a model with, 10 synthetic networks versus AT&T network with 20 or 30 million subscribers on it, right? So you're going to have a different assurance level in the model. So we need to first find ways to get data that's available to researchers so they can create their own algorithms to see which one works better than the other. And then we'll have some of these use cases that we can focus on. And I also kind of floated the idea to tech and AI is this, when you're building AI, there are two things, like that AI need to be trusted. Because if you're going to put out remediation, we shouldn't have a network fellow or a engineer come back and say, oh, come on, man, you really bombed this thing. Or out of remediation goes, shuts down a link between New York and Chicago and half of the Midwest is out of service, right? So you need to have that kind of trust that things work and that things work well. Because for enterprise, the network uptime may be subjective and they can live with it. But for a lot of service provider, it's hard to detect when you're providing network connectivity. Are you running voice? So a lot of time, this IP-based voice services, they really come back to FCC's mandates that you got to make sure that your network can provide E911 or 911 services. So their uptime requirement is 4 to 5 nines, right? And for whatever we do here, whether it's for QoS management, QoE management, we need to have that much trust that AI or machine learning is gonna do better than humans. And we gotta figure out where in the decision process we create the capabilities where a human will have some final decision to say, for example, can push the red button, don't go down very slow.
Right. Right. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So Mudassar, I do think that getting data from operators is going to be a continuing issue, because I think that operators are looking at that data as intellectual property, because they want to use it to create, my hypothesis is they will want to use it to create their own AI ML models to do types of FCAP's work that differentiates them.
Yep.
The sharing that data becomes more of an issue, but sharing the data becomes more of an issue. So I think that's a legitimate issue to talk about. I also think this is really applicable work to what's going on in Iran and the Iran Alliance. Can you talk to your peers, Peter Pacheco, Laura Dino? Because I think this might be a useful presentation to give in whichever of the work groups is doing the AI ML. I could look at
it. Yeah, so MITRE also have an internal AI ML. I haven't been too embedded with them. But I'll check with them.
I'm just thinking this might, I think, given the interest in AI ML from within the Iran community, and the fact that you are very network focused on this, I think it would be a good presentation when you're ready to give it to that organization. And that's why I pointed out Bob and Laura and Peter as good contacts. Laura and Peter are very much embedded in the Iran work.
Yeah, I work with them on a weekly basis.
Yeah.
So I got some other interaction with them. There's MITRE 5G platform activities and next G activities. A lot of this, it's a close-knit community.
Sure. It's, It's the same people over and over again.
I'll try to see if I can get some help from Mitra AI folks to give us some ideas where they've been getting the data. I think it's two parts, right? Data, model, and model validation, right? So, it's going to be very difficult to get a high quality product if it's not doing alpha and beta in an actual network, right? So you could at least do partial if we can get some of the contributors sign up, because we do have folks in AIML task force from all of these, different, top-notch either vendors or service providers who are interested in. So I think one other thing that the task force needs to be able to break through is, if we build a model, can this run in some environment that's reflective of real life scenarios, where you may run the model, do some learning and analysis, but leave the actual data in the organization. So we'll have to come up with some new ways to make this thing work if we expect that it will be a high quality product.
Hmm. Yeah, because in NextG, I think they're talking about AI ML being at different layers, having AI ML working at different layers of the network, basically.
Right? Okay.
Remember the workshop we went to, Madasser?
Yeah, so that's why I wanted people to kind of take a look at the first slide where different networks are described. And my approach was, let's break it down to atomic levels. Maybe you can combine few atomic levels and put a capability. This log correlation, event correlation, doing it, but we're doing it very, very slow. It's not a wire speed. So every device logs it. We have either host mon or SNMP in the network.
That
data is being captured. It's
Not
tied together in a story. So if I was, a customer care or a network administrator, when an alert pops up, and on a daily basis, 10 to 20,000 alerts will come in a service provider. It's not 20,000 triage breach that get open. So that in itself is a gap where...
Be nice to have help with that,
That you don't have event correlation. A lot of this stuff can be muted, and some of the stuff can be enhanced. To create a better picture of how network is performing, and just the query, I've been on one triage bridge with one of the largest service provider in the U.S. 27 hours straight with another 15, 20 people, the developers and network engineers and so forth, and VPs trying to figure out what's going on.
I know.
That in itself is something, if you have an easier way to sort of string together some of these elements, things can make life easier. Yeah, so thanks, Amy. I'll reach out to other MITRE folks and see if they can help me refine this bit further.
Great. That would be really great if you could do that. I think that it's a, I think it's something that we really want to be looking at within ORAN as well as within ONAP, because they're very they are very focused. That is one of the things that is part of ORAN with the non and near real-time RICs. The assumption is there will be AI ML running in those two components to help manage your access network. And they're also looking at, you know, they're looking at the RAND core data sharing in that model, to be used to train your AI and ML models up in the non-real-time RIC. So I think that there's I think there's a lot of overlap between the two organizations, and I think having, if we can frame it as the use cases, and that's one of the things I specifically liked about the FCAPS model. I think that fits very well into the way ORAN is thinking.
Yeah, they already have these like performance management APIs.
Yes.
You know, the capacity management, the configuration management. So they are it's predefined. It's easier to get started because they did the work putting in this format.
Right.
So you could say, hey, I'm just going to do little modules for this, right? And then just using integration efforts to combine some of these efforts could allow you to do bigger things. Like smoke activity can be enhanced with RIC actually doing the stuff that is being standardized.
Yeah.
Well, that's all I had to share. You know, if you have anything, you can send directly to me, or we can discuss on the next call, or you can put it in the notes on the meeting notes if any other ideas or thoughts come in. I think my whole reason for this was just do AIML, so it actually helps the process. So you have to have a view of the process, how a network manager in enterprise or a service provider will see what is his job or his core responsibility, and then align the capabilities so his life becomes easier.
Yep. Okay.
Great.
Hey, can I do a quick update on Nephew security?
Absolutely. Do you need presentation rights?
No. Just verbally. So last Tuesday, there was the Nephew SIG security working group. I think that they've just formed. And then we went through the general security philosophy. The only thing is today, they tried to set up a joint meeting today with the LF security SIG. I mean, they want to conform to LF security the guidelines. So that means Nephew, OSC, ORAN, LF should be in sync. So anyway, they're gonna schedule for today, 11 o'clock today at their meeting. And I think currently they are working on the OpenSSF batching. I think currently at 36% Nephew, and the target for 80% by end of this year. And then election is ongoing for chair and vice chair, and after election, they're gonna have more concrete plan. Anyway, for now, they want to conform to LF security SIG guidelines. So anyway, so that's the input.
Okay.
And so the with the LF security SIG, Their focus, one of their focuses is badging, correct?
Yeah, I don't know what's the topic they're going to provide, but I'm going to join today's meeting, and this is the Zoom meeting at 11 o'clock. So, you know,
and that's 11 o'clock. Is that 11 o'clock today, Eastern?
Today, yes, Eastern. And I think currently they're focusing on the batching and then, you know, those things. So, conformance. But we'll see what kind of a, I'm not sure it's going to happen today, but they tried to get some SIG member from LF security, but we'll see. But
okay, great. I want to make sure that the LF security SIG does focus on what I think is probably one of the primary things that Linux Foundation should focus on, which is producing code with a focus on reducing the vulnerabilities within the code that is produced by the Linux Foundation. I think I've been pretty vocal about that in the LFNGB. Is it GB or LFNTAC, or whichever one we're in, Mutasar. So, but I think this is a good start. I just think that if they were to focus on getting to 80% and they left out the part about the vulnerability management, to me, it's a big gap.
Mm.
So, but I don't think anybody is even remotely surprised that that's my focus.
Okay.
When they say 80%, what's that 80% of?
So currently they're saying OpenSSL badging. So the following
80% to the passing level?
Yeah, that's the looks like. Currently, NetFuel current code is, I think, currently at 36%, but target for 80%. That's their quick report. So I think that's the guess. But we'll see. We're going to get more detail at the meeting. So what's their real goal? So.
Yeah, a lot of, they can get that real.
I mean, I'm with Tony. You can get, Tony, I think what you were about to say was that you can get a lot of that by doing kind of next to, basically adopting what is already provided by the Linux Foundation in terms of managing the code bases. And that's my worry, is that you have a false sense of how good the code actually that is produced is.
The badging has multiple focuses, and the quality of the code is like one. A quarter of the badging requirements. Then there's all sorts of things that you get from, if you're following Linux Foundation practices, you should be getting those for free, as a no-brainer, and you should be, and the rest is documentation.
Right, and that's why I think the focus on 80%, Tony, is that you could be 80% and not be handling and not be fixing vulnerabilities in your code on a regular basis, and that's where I get worried.
Did anybody ever participate in ISO quality audits?
What kind of ISO audits?
They do quality audits for
ISO 9001 and things like that. Oh.
I went to them.
Been a few years.
So I think I like their approach. The way they go by is that you gotta have a quality statement of your organization, and that should be documented and visible. And when people do their daily jobs, they actually keep that in mind and contribute toward that goal. And they wanna make sure that there's an unbroken chain of processes between the goal and what you do on an everyday basis, right? And that's, I think, where Tony was saying the rest is documentation. I think it's in that vein that if they don't document what they're supposed to do, then there's no connection between a contributor or a PTL producing something. So it's important for I left to kind of have that unbroken chain where the organization or project have some goals and they are sort of broken down so that the coder, contributor, committers, PTLs, then they can contribute towards that goal. But like, I've been audited, and then I also did the Cisco campus audit hosting roles a few times. And I got to learn a lot about this, where stating a goal, making it available, breaking it down into, like, the biggest thing for me was they asked me one time, what do you do on a daily basis? I said, well, I consult with service provider, blah, blah, blah. Well, how do you know you're supposed to do this? you know, so you keep digging, then you figure out, no, there is this information gap somewhere, right? Where things can twist and go out of way unless you have an unbroken chain. So we spent a few years before we got onto certification, and then we maintained certification for 8 years. But there was a lot of this stuff where what we were doing had a slightly different view than the people who made the policy and strategy in Cisco. It wasn't well connected. So if they are trying to do goal badging, I think it goes back to, hey, put your stated goal and say, we're marching to this beat.
For example, in ONAP, we've got a couple projects in ONAP that are very, very, very close to, or got very close to gold, but they're not able to get to gold because not all of the requirements are under the projects. Ability to affect. And CPS is so close, but it's the last hurdle is not something that they can do anything about. It has to be, it's an ONAP wide thing that has to be enabled. But you've got your project requirements, you've got your application requirements, you've got your security requirements. There's requirements on the people involved as part of your project. There's requirements on the code itself. There's requirements on the production how you go about producing or building the code. There's requirements on the infrastructure for where your website is kept and how you is that hardened? I don't.
So I think
I'm not sure where to go.
Yeah, I'm not either. We are in fact over time, and I want to be respectful of people's time. I'm going to put up this on the board. I have created a meeting minutes page. I've uploaded Mudassar's deck. Thank you, Mudassar. We do have a couple of topics for next week, and that is going. And I think this is an ongoing one, Byung. We have an issue that the modeling team removed, said, oh yeah, just put these repos into maintenance mode without going through all the right steps. I did not realize they had done that. So this is something we've kind of got to undo. That and I think we have to address, if somebody needs those, I think we've reached our first phase, our first real example of something that a project team has no intention of supporting, and we're going to need to find a new home for it.
Yeah, and Kenny going to we deep to Kenny.
Yes,
and here's he will think about it, how to handle, and then you send your response. So I sent copy to him. So we'll see how he.
I thought I sent it on. Did I not copy everybody on my response, which was I agreed with you that they were supposed to go through all the steps?
I'm not sure that Kenny was involved. Anyway,
I got something back. I got something back from Kenny saying thank you, but okay. I'll double check that it was to my response.
Okay.
Came last night, so that we have that. I think that's the primary thing that we have for next week is the where we are with Etsy, tracking where we are on. Tracking where we are on the LFIT getting two-factor authentication enabled. Oh my gosh. So. Stay tuned for that one. I'll try and get that. Anything else that we need for next week that anyone can identify?
I don't think so.
Okay.
All right. Thank you.
Because I know that it has, or last time I logged into ONAP this weekend. And it did not challenge me for two-factor authentication, so I'll follow up.
I tested it, and it did not.
Okay, good. Two of us.
Yep. Mm-hmm. So, yeah.
All right.
Okay. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Bye-bye.